from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in this morning's opening hour, House Democratic leader and former Speaker Nancy Pelosi will join us in the studio in our first half hour to discuss the latest news from Capitol Hill, as well as some of her recent flagship women's issues like equal pay, family and medical leave, and child care. Then the controversy over drones and their use by the U.S. government in targeted killings continues on. President Obama signaled last spring that he would shift control of the drone program from the CIA to the Pentagon, but this move is being met with resistance by Congress, which is trying to block the transfer of control. We'll talk with Eric Schmidt, national security correspondent for the New York Times, about the hot-button issue of drones. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Presently serving as a Democratic leader in the House of Representatives, Democratic San Francisco Congressional Representative Nancy Pelosi, the first woman Speaker of the House of Representatives, joins us in studio for this opening Forum half hour. And good to have you back with us, Nancy Pelosi. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Michael. My pleasure to be here.
I just want to call you Madam Speaker still. I noticed that Sean Hannity is still calling Newt Gingrich Mr. Speaker, and so you are not the Speaker. I know you hope to re-establish yourself as Speaker, but are people still calling you Madam Speaker?
Yes, some do. Many do. In the Capitol, they call me Madam Leader or Nancy. That's the preferable. Once the Speaker, always the Speaker kind of thing. Same thing, Mr. President. But I'm not concerned about titles, and I'm not even concerned about having one. I just want the Democrats to win the majority so we have a Democratic speaker.
How do things look? Maybe some are saying that things are looking a little iffy not only in the Senate, but even in the House.
Well, you know, they can
or
think.
Or vice versa, excuse me.
Yeah. Well, we feel pretty good about where we are. We've met all of our goals and gone beyond them. We've outraised everyone. That shouldn't be a measure of success, but it's a show of strength. We've out-recruited. We have fabulous candidates. We're very, very proud of that. And we will out-mobilize on the ground. So our chairman, Steve Israel, is from New York. He's fabulous. And he's the chairman of our effort to win the House. He's great. So, again, one day at a time, one good day, one good week, one good month, one good quarter, one good year.
Well, you're mobilizing. Democrats are mobilizing around women's issues. 165th anniversary of Seneca Falls, and congratulations to Madam Speaker because she was recently inducted into the Women's Hall of Fame. A real honor.
Oh, I'm so thrilled. It was very exciting to be there. 165 years ago, these women and some men came together in Seneca Falls to declare that all men and women are created equal. And now, 165 years later, I got the wonderful honor of being inducted in the Hall of Fame, and coinciding with what we are putting forth, when women succeed, America succeeds. On the very day of the 165th anniversary, steps of the Capitol, Democrats came to the Capitol steps and said, we have to, standing on the shoulders of these women of so many years ago, following through on all other actions taken since then, we must do more.
So in the spirit of Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, you're talking about pay, equal pay, family leave, medical leave, child care. I mean, the whole range of issues often associated with equality, gender equality.
Since we were on the steps and even before that, I traveled the country. I've been in over 20 cities on this subject of when women succeed, America succeeds. And one of them was under the auspices of the Kennedy Library and Radcliffe Institute in Massachusetts. And there we had one of these occasions honoring President Kennedy signing the Equal Pay Act 50 years ago. It was earlier this year, obviously, in the summer of 63. 50 years ago, talking about raise the minimum wage, have child care, work-family balance, and we still haven't really achieved everything we need to do. Over 60% of the people who receive the minimum wage are women. Women in the workplace need to be treated fairly, value their work, pay equity. Why should a woman work for the first 3 months of the year free compared to what her male counterpart makes? She makes 70% of what he makes in many cases. And the issue of paid leave is really very, very strong issue. It's being emphasized by the Shriver report, which you may have seen. And that is something that makes a big difference. I'll talk about it more if you wish. But we have family and medical leave. So 21 years ago, President Clinton signed. I was proud to be one of the people who worked on that. But a lot of it isn't paid. And you have to have paid leave because people can't afford to take off time from work.
And your opponents in Congress are going to say this is more money being spent. This is more entitlements that we're talking about here, more taxing possibly even.
No, this is a private sector thing. I mean, in other words, if you have 50 employees or more.
I'm talking more about the whole picture of what you're talking about here.
Well, most of what we're talking about raising the minimum wage is not a federal expenditure. That has nothing to do with the deficit. In fact, it will bring more revenue into reduce the deficit. Paid leave, again, we're talking about private sector employment by and large, and the issue of now the one issue where the federal government will have a role is in the public-private partnerships we need to establish for quality, affordable child care.
I was going to say
early childhood education, whatever you want to call it. Like now, the president's initiative is on universal preschool. That's only a piece of it. We need much more than that, and we need it earlier in a child's life. But that does. That is, that would be an investment.
But you're talking about strengthening Medicare and Social Security too, aren't you? In this whole package, in terms of making women stronger, so America can be
right.
Stronger.
Well, that's always those are overarching issues for us. This one was these three things: paid sick leave, and child care are what women told us in the workplace that would make the biggest difference to them. And so that's why our focus in this agenda. There are many other.
Well, actually, in fact, I've been reading about this, and I noticed, for example, that you spoke about the fact that women are more reluctant to go into politics because of mischaracterizations and negative ads and all those sorts of things. And women are less likely to be owning entrepreneurs, a disproportionate number of men who are. So there's a whole gestalt here in many ways.
Well, part of our initiative is about entrepreneurship and enabling women to have ownership, not only about jobs, but women to be job creators and ownership and the pay equity and all of the respect for women in the workplace enables them to move from there into ownership. But since you brought up the campaign issue, today is the fourth anniversary of the Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, which was really it's really a travesty of justice. It's a horrible thing. So I have issued a dare for years now, since it passed, disclose where does this money come from. Amend the Constitution to overturn Citizens United. Reform the system. Let's have public financing of campaigns, fair elections so that everybody is on equal footing, and disclose, amend, reform, empower to challenge many of these initiatives throughout the country that block people from voting. And one of the biggest suppressors of the vote is the confusion that big special interest unidentified money pours into the system.
Our guest is Nancy Pelosi. She's House Democratic leader in the U.S. House of Representatives and represents California's 12th District. San Francisco is a Democrat. We only have a half hour with her, so I'm going to open the phone lines right now. I'd like to talk about all kinds of things on Capitol Hill, but what's on your mind and what would you like to ask the Democratic leader? Our phone lines are available to you whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, and you can join us now. The toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You also might want to weigh in on this whole campaign that is going on where women are concerned, and we do welcome your involvement in the program, so feel free to join it. Again, it's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, of course, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and there are a number of other ways to communicate. You can tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page, and we'd like to hear from you, and we'll bring you in here as best we can. I wanted to get some quick comments on first of all, on the voting rights bill, things look like they may move along in a bipartisan way.
Yeah, another ill-advised Supreme Court decision overturning aspects of the Voting Rights Act. But this week, for a while now, members have been working in a bipartisan way to bring a bill to the floor. The bill that they parts of which they overturned was a bill that was written in my office, the previous reauthorization of the Voting Rights Act. We had over 400 votes, I think, for it in the House. It was so bipartisan. This bill now will be bipartisan as well. We just have to get the speaker to enable it to come to the floor. But I'm optimistic That we will get a Voting Rights Act. Just back to the women and politics, though, for a moment. I promise you this. I know this as an absolute fact, that if you reduce the role of money in politics and increase the level of civility, you will elect more women to public office, and that will be a very good thing. In fact, it's the most wholesome thing we can do.
But, you know, I was thinking this idea that women don't want to get into the political arena because of attacks on character and all of these sorts of things, I'm sure has a great deal of truth to it. But there are a lot of men who are reluctant to go into politics for the same reason.
Well, you know, it applies to both. There's no question about it. But we need more women in politics right now, with all due respect to our male colleagues, many of whom have accomplished great things for
us. You know, we're behind every right up down there with Sri Lanka and Serbia and I believe Senegal in terms of representation. I mean, when you talk about 20 senators out of 178 representatives out of some 430-some.
Yeah. Well, I made it a priority to elect many more women to the House, and we have, but it's still not enough. But and you have to change the environment, because we're talking incrementally. If you change the environment, which is what the money and the debate atmosphere is on it, you will elect more women. We cannot continue on an old turf and say, why isn't this working for us? It isn't. So let's make it a different environment and elect more women. And by the way, Sri Lanka's had women prime ministers, even though they may not, that we might be down them with representation in parliament, but they're ahead of us in terms of head of state.
Hillary Clinton going to run?
I don't know. I hope so. I think if she does, she would be one of the best prepared people to go into the White House. Oh, and of course, if she runs, I think she will win.
We've got lots of questions for you. Lots of people want to talk to you, obviously. But quickly, what are the chances of an immigration bill?
Oh, we have to have one. Quite frankly, I even say
what I asked.
we have to have one. Well, the couple things. First of all, what would that bill look like? I insist that it would be a bill that would have a path to citizenship. We cannot have a bill that's a compromise that says, well, they'll just be legalized, because that's not fair to the immigrant, but it's not fair to America. We're not going to be a country where they didn't even second-class citizens. We're saying you can come here, do our work, but you can't be a citizen. So path to citizenship isn't. We've had our principles out there, we the House Democrats, for a long time, similar to Senate Democrats. Secure our borders, protect our workers, unite our families, have a path to citizenship. The Speaker, the Senate has passed a bill that does many of those things, not all, but many of those things. Speaker says that's not acceptable to him. He's going to do the bills in dribs and drabs. Okay, do it any way you want, but let's get us on a path to passing a bill. I'm optimistic we can do something this year. And we're not going away until we get that done. Or we're not going away until we pass the Brady background check bill. Or we're not going away until we pass the minimum wage bill. The list goes on of initiatives that we should, and that over 70% of the American people support. ENDA, already passed the Senate, ENDA, ending discrimination in the workplace for people, the LGBT community. So there are many things that the Senate has passed that we can do. If the Speaker would, it's the awesome power of the Speaker. People don't understand how powerful the Speaker is.
We bring our callers and we'll get them to you as many as we can. William, you're first. Good morning.
Yes, thank you very much. I would very much appreciate the Speaker's defense of her position that Edward Snowden should be put on trial for having revealed to we Americans the fact that we're being spied upon.
Actually, let me just dovetail that with, I'm looking at Joe, who asks on the web, what does Nancy Pelosi think about the need to send a message to the NSA when its leaders lie to Congress and order the NSA's personnel engage in widespread activities that are clearly organized crime by any sane definition? They need to know that they should and will go to jail, just like anyone else who does such things. Let's have Clapper and Alexander behind bars, please. In fact, let's get a few cells in Alcatraz renovated for them so they can reside alongside the ghosts of equally depraved criminal minds. Very strong passions on this. I think Williams hit the nerve here.
There are, and rightfully so. And I have my ongoing for years not only criticism, but opposition to the NSA. So I'm sympathetic to the concern about what the NSA was doing. But on the Snowden thing, you know, some people are saying, traitor, this or that. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the law was broken. He should come home, face the music. I don't think he should be harshly treated. But you do see in Washington people saying, well, he went to Russia. I think his case would have been a little better if he had not taken all that information to another country and then release it in a way that really, I think, can be harmful to our country in terms of hacking, if such was the case, Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany's phone. So there were some things that I think sort of weakened the case of Snowden in terms of he did nothing wrong. But again, I have two questions, and I ask the NSA all the time, how could one person have all this access and be able to walk out the door with all of this information when our Congress can't even get this mess? You know, we're asking them to give us more transparency about what they do, and somebody can walk out the door with it.
With all due respect to people who haven't continued their education, a person who didn't even have a high school diploma, I mean, this sort of boggles the mind in many respects. What was he trained for? He was a hacker, basically.
Yeah.
Let me get another caller on here, and that's you, Trevor. Hi. Good morning.
Hi. I was wondering, I'm a teacher, and it seems that we're doing more lockdown drills than fire drills, and I was just wondering from the speaker if she thinks that it'll take another huge tragedy to pass meaningful background check legislation for gun control, or if we're just sort of doomed to not see it happen.
Well, I hope not. I hope it will not require another tragedy. But what could be more compelling than the Newtown tragedy and the fact that thousands of people have died since then on the streets of our cities? Children have been hurt. And so we are going to get the job done, and the public overwhelmingly supports it. Members of the NRA support the background check legislation. Gun owners support the background check legislation. We call it the Brady Bill now, and we meet regularly. We meet whether it's the 6th anniversary, the 1-year anniversary. We did in Newtown just in December. But I think on this, on these and other issues, I always quote President Lincoln, who said, "Public sentiment is everything," and we have to publicly just demand that this happen. It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning that even though it got a majority of the votes in the Senate, it didn't get 60. And a few Democrats even voted against it, which I was very disappointed in. But it would not have given us the 60 anyway. But the fact is that this will happen if the public weighs in, and we cannot have another tragedy. And I thank you for being a teacher. God bless you for what you're doing, because education is the most important thing. We honored Martin Luther King yesterday, but we also took the opportunity to talk about Nelson Mandela, who said education is the most important force for opportunity for everyone. And we know that. In addition to that, education brings more money to the Treasury than anything that you can name. It's a stunning thing, whether it's early childhood, K through 12, higher ed, postgrad, lifetime learning. That is the most important investment we can make in people. And at the same time, it reduces the deficit. So
it also reduces poverty. And you got we go back to women's issues. You've got the highest poverty rate in 2 decades among women.
Yeah, it's stunning about what is happening as far as women are concerned. That's why we have this priority of when women succeed, America succeeds. And education is the link, because we don't want women just to get a higher minimum wage and stay in that job. We want them to aspire to higher opportunities and, again, starting their own businesses. But the key to it all is education. That's why so many of us are so sad that George Miller is leaving the Congress, the champion. Nobody knows more about it. But his work on education, I'm certainly, it's in his DNA, will continue.
And let me say, we've scheduled Congressman Miller for by many people's lights, unfortunately, and I'm sure Speaker Pelosi's is an exit interview. Just a question from a listener. It says, last week at the Brookings Institution, Representative Paul Ryan cited means testing as a work disincentive built into anti-poverty programs. How about working with Representative Ryan to develop better means testing that would income average over several years? By providing a transition period, this would help wean families off of government supports as their income grows.
Well, I don't know exactly what Paul Ryan proposed, but I do know that the Paul Ryan budget is a terrible budget, and it is not a reflection of the values of our country in terms of investment in education. It gives tax breaks to millionaires and at the expense of Pell Grants. I mean, so you can say whatever you want in a speech, but the rubber meets the road in the budget. And the budget that they have, again, is not a statement of our values. It puts millionaires over Medicare, millionaires over education, and the rest. And I want to reward success. We love achievement. But the fact is that we, for the competitiveness of our country, for innovation initiatives, for the aspirations of people, we must invest in education. Now, I'm fully, and I have worked with Republicans in the past to try to lift up people so they do not need to have food stamps. 6 million people would come off of food, be lifted out of poverty if we raised the minimum wage. Yeah, 40. When the Republicans shut down government, when they shut down government because they couldn't have it all their own way, although the bill was
because
their
they wanted
bill.
To get rid of the Affordable Care.
But Paul Ryan voted against the initiative to open government, which was the Republican initiative to open government. He voted against that. So, interesting. Speech making is one thing. Policy making is another. We're always open to anything that lifts people up, but we have to make sure we know the angel is in the details.
Leslie, go ahead and join us. Welcome. You're on Forum.
Thank you. I just recently mentioned the Affordable Care Act and the Republicans trying to hold things up because of it. When do you think we will know when the Affordable Care Act has been a success?
I think it is becoming more of a success every day. The Affordable Care Act is a success. It's the website that was not a success, but that is improving on a regular basis. And I think probably in a couple of months, as March 31st was the deadline, and they moved it another couple of weeks by then, we will see that it reach its fulfillment. This is a legislation that honors the vows of our founders for life, a healthier life, liberty to pursue your happiness, freeing you from being job locked because of a pre-existing condition, to following your passion, to be an artist, to be self-employed, to start a business, to change jobs. If we had no other reason to pass the Affordable Care Act, the sustainability, the cost would have been reason enough. It was unsustainable for families, for individuals, for small businesses, for corporate America, certainly unsustainable for public, the local, state, and federal government. And it is on a path to be saving $1 trillion over the life of the bill that we have to measure it by, according to the Congressional Budget Office. So it's a great thing. We're excited about all the stories. Just imagine on January 1st, no longer will be a woman being a pre-existing condition, medical condition. Lifetime limits, no more annual limits.
That's all very heartening, but with seconds left, tell me what you plan to do essentially in terms of policy with respect to this campaign.
And in the campaign, well, as I said earlier, we are proud of our messengers and we're proud of our message. We have to build confidence in who we are as a country, confidence in our economy so that we have an economy where many more people participate in the prosperity of America. We have to confidence in who we are as a people, by and large, a nation of immigrants with all the love and respect for our Native American brothers and sisters. So we must pass an immigration bill. We take an oath to protect and defend, and we have to build confidence and safety by passing the Brady background check legislation.
Seconds left. We're going to talk to Eric Schmidt, national security writer for The New York Times. In the next segment, we're going to talk about whether or not drones should be under the purview of the Pentagon or of the CIA. Where do you stand, quickly?
Well, it's an interesting debate, and I know that that Eric has contended that there's certain things in the classified annex of the appropriations bill, which, of course, we're not at liberty to talk about. One thing we want is more transparency.
We'll get to that next. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Nancy Pelosi.
Thank you very much, Michael.